basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the midpoint stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Bryant for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And did you know that there's a Laker game tomorrow? Isn't that crazy? First game of Summer League, the California Classic. Tomorrow, our Lakers matched up with one of the two Golden State teams there. Can't wait for that. But D, a little bit later, we're going to talk about some rumors about Jonathan Kuminga. Going to talk about some rumors about possibly Rui returning. But first, it was such an interesting experience to go from so little in the way of Lakers news that it was anxiety-inducing to just an absolute fire hose of signings and sign-and-trade for Kessler and all of that. And you and I have a similar ethos of we don't feel the urge to necessarily be first about something. But on a day like that, we want to have a reaction pod out as soon as we can. But I've often felt that just having a little bit time to digest something can, even if it doesn't change your opinion, just give a little more detail to it. So having that night of sleep to think about what the Lakers did yesterday, what's on your mind as we open up today?
One of the things that struck me in the aftermath of the moves was the sheer difference in opinion that seemingly you and I hold, which is mostly fine or supportive or even like happy in certain cases about what's transpired, and sort of this other side, which almost is seemingly like universal, of there being real disdain and dislike for what the Lakers did. And it's interesting reflecting on that over the course of almost a full day now.
I'm glad you brought that up first, because I don't think I've ever felt more out of step with consensus on the Lakers than I do right now.
Don't get me wrong. The people, many of them smart people, people who I respect, whose opinions I value and listen to, and when they agree with me, I feel smarter. And when they disagree with me, I maybe even sometimes start to question, like, am I seeing this incorrectly?
Yeah, you got to reevaluate at least when smart people are like, actually, I see things differently. You do this for me all the time when you're like, I think this and I might see things a little differently. It causes me to at least review it a little bit deeper.
Totally. To see so many, in some cases, like trash the Lakers, it's led me not to necessarily second guess my gut reaction, but it's been interesting to have this be the world groupthink. Everyone is sort of leaning in this direction, which is not the way that I see things at all. They haven't changed my mind necessarily, because the things that they are talking about are things that I accept and acknowledge. There are things that we even hit on in our discussion yesterday. Like, I do think the draft compensation that they gave up for Kessler, for example, is more than I would have wanted to give. And in a lot of ways, you could argue that it's too much. But the player option stuff, or like paying Mamu or Grimes a couple of million more, those things aren't really relevant to me within the context of a cap space plan for the Lakers. The one signing that grates against me some is the Sexton signing. But one of the levels of analysis that I've almost always tried to use as a fan of the team, but also general NBA stuff, do I understand?
Mm-hmm.
And if I understand what they're going after, and that idea holds water to me as a viable path, I don't have to agree for me to be like, I get it. And so I want to give something a chance before I'm like, no, that's absolutely dumb or not going to work at all, because at least I get it, and I see sort of the pathway for things.
This is so much how I feel right now with this team in terms of its perimeter defense and the approach towards, say, Marcus versus Grimes, for example. I like Marcus more than I like Grimes, but I think I totally understand the Grimes signing, and I think that Redick probably had some influence on that as well. But if you've got Grimes at the two and, say, Rui comes back at the four, if you're going to go that offense forward type of route, like, hell yeah, if those are your two guys in those spots filling those positions, like, I want more perimeter defense. And I think that that is more likely. I think they're going to have to at least make a move for somebody like that, whether it's now or a little bit later. But I totally see the vision at the very least. I understand what they're going for.
With the Kessler stuff as well, because he's a big, big signing. Whenever you make that big of a swing, I think that that's the thing that you open yourself up to for the most criticism as well, right? Like, if someone's going to spend their entire day complaining about Colin Sexton's $9 million, then God bless you. That's not what I'm going to do. Oh, room exception, please. But Kessler is a guy who, if you want to take the sort of anti-Kessler approach, he's a guy who's never really played in the playoffs. He's never really played in meaningful basketball games. He has an injury history, including just missing an entire season with a shoulder injury that, if it requires surgery, it's going to keep you out. It's not like an ACL or something like that, or an Achilles, where that's also a year-long injury. But the combination of his youth, his relative inexperience in high-level games, and then the compensation and the salary awarded to him, those two things are at different ends of the profile. Typically, you pay the amount that you pay for a player like Kessler for someone who's very much established or has more of a track record of being the level of player that you're saying that he already is with the salary that you're giving him. And so I get that there's skepticism around that. Circling the square, though, of the idea that I truly do believe that from a prototype and archetype standpoint, he's the exact sort of center you want to play with Luka Doncic. That's where I'm like, don't you see it? And those people will be like, I see it. I think he's going to be good. But, and then the but totally swings in the other direction of, but I don't like it. I don't like it because they gave up this much or they're paying him this much. But if you see it, and you believe that he's actually going to be productive and be a good player for the team, then that's where it rubs me wrong a little bit.
So I think that there was some sticker shock on the cost that it took to get him, right? With the two firsts and the two swaps, which I get. However, there can be a certain losing the forest from the trees of this, where if you do that, you can find yourself trading a guy for Giannis 1 week, and then a week later, you're trading him for Paul George because you didn't want to give up Hugo Gonzalez. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's much more important to actually come away with the foundational guy. Jovan had a great write-up about this yesterday where he's talking about, like, really a foundational piece here. I'm glad that you centered this around Kessler rather than just the whole collective of all the news that we got yesterday, because he's the big 18-point font headline of this. And the other guys are supporting players that are making supporting player type of money. I feel like if we traded Kessler for Trey Murphy and two picks and two swaps, people have been conditioned to be like, yeah, that's what Trey Murphy's going to go for. That's less of a need. And there would be way less of a reaction. But like, I started this offseason from the premise of some skepticism of Luka and Austin as a pairing. However, what was my argument? If you're going to go that route, you have to have a third player in the front court that's a defensive stalwart that can help control the boards, can help really be the captain of your defense, really elevate your team in that way, while also being a pick and roll partner for your two pick and roll guards that is competent and good on offense. They don't have to be great. I'm fine, and I want them to be a defense forward type of player, but they have to have a level of competency on offense as well to truly be worth it. And in going through the league and looking for that guy, there was one player in the whole league who I thought sufficiently checked all the boxes necessary, and we got him. So I'm happy about that. Let's go to break here. Come back. Keep going.
I think it was like in the 2 or 3 months after the Luka trade, you had asked me, assuming you're starting from scratch, tell me what players you would actually surround Luka with, or at least the archetypes of those players. And I was just like, funny enough, the center would be, I think I told you it would be Zubats, would be like the exact sort of get that I would want. I was just like, he's huge. He sets good screens. He's good on offense, but it's low usage. He's gonna be a good defensive player and a good rebounder. And that's that. And then at power forward, I was just like, I want a guy like Aaron Gordon, who is gonna do X, Y, and Z. He's gonna be a defense first player, but he could shoot the ball some, and on and on and on. And then I was just like, oh, I want a secondary guard who can shot create, or that could even be like a forward guy, but somebody on the wing who can do this. And then I'd love to have a guard who is a defense first guard who can also shoot the ball. And then you made me laugh because you said, congrats, you just built the dream team.
Right.
You just spent $400 million on all of these max level players. And I'm just like, that's fair, right? But if we're talking peak of the peak, this is what I want. In bringing this back to Kessler and centering around it, to me, he's very much in the Zubats mold. He's just a lot younger. He's bigger. And I actually think that he's a better defensive player and a better rebounder. Mm. Like, I think he's actually better than Zubats in a lot of ways. It's just that Zubats is what, like 6 years older at this point? And I'm honestly hoping that in 6 years, if Kessler is still on the Lakers, that he would have made an all-star team or been in the conversation for DPOY, even though that's like Wemby's award to lose like every single year, right? But you get what I'm saying, that he would have made an all-defense team. That, and there's just a lot of stuff in his future that I could see, because prototypically, he is the guy that I want to surround Luka and Austin. And it's that fit element that I think is sort of being sidelined too often within the discussion of what his worth is, because this is roster construction 101. If you have an all-star level wing, for example, and I think the Clippers suffered from this a little bit, they were just like, you know what would be great is to have two all-star level wings. And then we can have the same thing for all 48 minutes. But from a team building perspective, I always thought that the Lakers' pursuit of Anthony Davis as like this sort of interior hub for everything that LeBron was going to be is like, and the way that their games match, that's the much better approach to team build, is you want complementary talents that if there's overlap between them, that's fine, but you still want them to be able to live in their own lanes in order to be successful. And this is why, to me, Luka and Austin are so similar in sort of how perimeter-based players who are going to do X in terms of how they're at their best. You need a bridge between those two sort of parallel paths where it's just like, well, this guy does the same thing as this guy. How are you going to connect them? And I think Kessler is that exact sort of player. And I'm sorry, you pay a premium for that when it's actually time to get it. And so was the cost and the sticker shock there for me? It was there for me too, but almost instantly, because he was my top target, I was just over the moon that they got the guy that I was just like, no, this is the dude you want.
And the alternatives were very dark. It's like a very different offseason where, yeah, maybe you get a perimeter defender that you like a little bit better, but you've got Mitchell Robinson you're paying $15, $16 million a year instead. Like, no, man, this is a much better future. And I know that people feel like the Lakers don't have any flexibility going forward. I completely disagree. I think this is part of the whole like people overvaluing first round draft picks. And while those are certainly a currency in the NBA and a valuable one, they're not the only one. Good players in their 20s on contracts that can play, like that has plenty of value. Guys like Cam Carr, and like if Cam Carr shows that he's a good NBA player, he's on a cost-controlled contract for teams for years and years. Same thing with Adu. And so there's plenty of ways to get there, D, that first-round picks are nice, but they're there so you can get really good players, and we got that. And I don't think that the Lakers are, for one, done this offseason, which was another thing that was weird to me, D, of like, it went from we made no moves at all to everybody acting like we were done with our offseason all in one day, where yes, they spent their cap space there, but they've still got moves to make. They're still, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, but like, it's not just all about first round picks in terms of improving your team.
part of the analysis that I think is tough for me, and I don't want to call it groupthink because I do think individually a lot of people just came to the same conclusion.
Totally
again,
agree.
Leads me to sort of be like, okay, well, let me take a step back and reevaluate. But one of the things that I've noticed, and this is especially true with like the flexibility point and like the picks point, if you're reverse engineering your argument of this team isn't good enough, how do you get better? You get better through having draft picks to trade, and this is the pathway, then you're instantly going to be like, okay, well, then the Lakers are in hell.
Mm-hmm.
It's the doomsday scenario for them. They built a team that's not good enough, and now they don't have the assets to actually improve it. And I'm not reverse engineering my argument from the conclusion that I came to. I'm starting my argument from the standpoint of, I like these players. And I want to see what they're able to do together. And then you continue to try to improve your team from that standpoint, rather than the reverse engineered idea of this team can never do it. They're never going to be good enough. And so they're doomed. Next podcast topic, like we're done here. And I'm just not so quick to dismiss like Luka and Austin and the big men that they wanted and then seeing where they can go from there. But there is still work to do. So it would be a good time to sort of pivot to what's left to do in the sort of additional reporting that's out there right now.
Yeah, some rumors about Rui and Kuminga. Lakers need a starting four. They need somebody to fill that other spot that's next to Luka. And look, I like Kuminga from a, I think it'd be interesting to add another hyper athlete to the team and he could be fun at that four spot. But Rui, and I've criticized Rui plenty over the years for what he's not. We talked recently about how we probably talk about him through a deficit model more than any other Laker. But Rui is a Laker to me. There are guys, even Marcus, who I love, Kennard, some of the other guys, there are guys that play for the Lakers, and then there are guys who are Lakers to me. And Rui is a Laker to me. And whether he stays with the team this year or not, he's going to be somebody whose time with the team I look back on fondly. And I view him as part of the story of the Lakers and of this decade. And so if they're able to make some machinations, and D, you laid this out pretty well, I'd like to hear your thoughts on like the how of this. But if you're going to go that offense forward route and start Grimes at the two and have that sort of just unguardability on the offensive end, and you put Rui spacing in the corner around Luka and Austin with a defensive stalwart at the five, I do think down the line, if you need to make a tweak toward more defense, you can move some of these players for an equivalent player caliber of them that's just better on defense than they are on offense. Like, you can make moves, smaller moves like that down the line. But man, Rui back at that starting four spot, like, I don't know. I'm ready to root for this team. I'm excited about where they are. Like, to me, the version of this team that was going to contend for a championship this year is the one in which we're at this point where they've built this type of team, and then it's LeBron James signing for the MLB-ish type of salary that we're talking about with Rui. And that's the version of the team that's like, hey, let's go win a championship. It's not the world we're living in. That's not what LeBron wanted to do. And it's the Lakers approaching it from a, we will add you to this at the end, I think sort of leads to that conclusion in the first place, D. But you add Rui to this squad, like, I don't know, that's a good team.
I would love to bring Rui back. I know that we've had some conversations that maybe could be interpreted as otherwise. I will say, though, that after Marcus and Kennard have departed, that Jackson has departed, I would love to have one player from last year's team who I trust and who, yes, I like, and who the team has chemistry with and an understanding with, to be back, honestly. And Rui's skill set does fit perfectly next to Kessler and Luka and Austin. In that case, he seems sort of like the forward version of Grimes. I think Grimes, yes, is a more well-rounded offensive player, and like what he can do off the dribble and finish at the basket. And he's a more fluid athlete overall. But Grimes is also shooting guard sized. He's like 6'5". Having a forward who could shoot would be great. I also think another downhill athletic popping forward like Kuminga would also be an interesting add, with Grimes sort of filling in the, mm-hmm, role that I'm talking about for Rui. But the idea of Rui sounds great to me. And it was Dave McMenamin who wrote about the Lakers' flurry of signings and did mention that there are some eyebrows raised around the league that Rui hasn't signed yet, and that because he's not signed, there is speculation around the league that the Lakers may be working to try to bring him back. Let's take our second break here, Pete, and when we come back, we'll get into the machinations of how that could possibly happen. The Lakers essentially have at least two players right now, and maybe three, depending on how you classify Bronny, in Vando and Dalton, who were basically out of the rotation for the majority of the season last year, but who were on the books for next season, and Vando for an additional season after next season. And one of the things that I was talking about yesterday online, before any of this Rui stuff even popped up in Dave's reporting, was that the possibility of waiving and stretching Jared Vanderbilt's salary and then looking for a trade partner for Dalton Connect in order to open up additional cap space for the Lakers. Basically, if you were to stretch and waive Vanderbilt, he would then count as only a little bit over $5 million against the cap, and his salary is $12 million next season. So you would instantly open up about $7 million in cap space by stretching and waiving Vando. If you were then able to trade Dalton Connect into someone's cap space or into a small trade exception or any exception, really, then you could open up a little bit over $11 million in cap space. If you were to do the same with Bronny, you get to almost $14 million in cap space, Pete, which is essentially what the Lakers are paying Mamu, and only about $1 million less than what the full MLE is out there on the marketplace. And so my main idea was sort of just like, hey, if you work these exact moves, you could possibly create enough cap space to re-sign Rui, and then you fill out the rest of your roster with minimum guys, but you essentially swap out guys who weren't playing for Rui, who is a starting level player for you and has been for multiple seasons now. And so to me, that is a pathway to bring back Rui. And I'm wondering what your thoughts would be about that. I know, like, we just talked about bringing Rui back and how we both endorse that, but what do you think of the machinations of that, and how viable do you think a pathway like that is, considering the no draft picks to trade, really, and yada, yada, yada?
Well, that's part of the reason why something like this is essential. Like, this can't be the team that we have right now, can't be the team that we go into the season with. We're not going to be that really good team that I was talking about earlier, which is part of the reason why I do think that there is that one more move to make. A question for you, would they be able to say, sign Rui to that one-year deal for all the money that you were talking about opening up right there, retain his bird rights, and then in sort of a wink and a nod, be like, yeah, we'll pay you $18 million next year or whatever it is?
No, because the Lakers lost Rui's bird rights when they renounced him in order to open up the cap space that they used to sign everyone else.
But they haven't signed those guys. None of those deals are official.
If they don't renounce him, they don't have the space at all.
What if they sign him first, though, to that deal? What if he's the first signing, one-year deal at $14 million? That takes his cap hold off of the books because you've signed him to a contract. Then you officially complete all of those other moves. That can't work?
It can't, because Rui would be essentially signed into cap space. Like,
I see.
Right, because essentially you're turning his cap hold into used space. It would be different if they had all of that cap space already to sign all of these players with his cap hold already on the books the way that they have with Austin, right?
So
like, there's really no way around the fact that these other moves have happened. There are three stages of bird rights. There's non-bird, there's early bird, and then there's full bird. The Lakers had full bird rights on Austin. They had full bird rights on Rui and LeBron as well. Early bird allows you to give like a certain percentage raise on top of that, and non-bird allows you to give another certain percentage raise on what you had before, which I think is 120%. And so in theory, if the Lakers were to sign Rui to a one-year deal, they could give him 120% of what they have this year. They would also have their full mid-level exception next season if they wanted to go that route and just pay Rui the full mid-level, which will likely be closer to $16 million a year. Right now, it's $15 million a year. And so there would be avenues to keep Rui beyond this season and give him a real raise. It just wouldn't be the, we can pay you $18 or $20 million next season, because they won't have limited bird rights they would have for him wouldn't amount to that substantive a race, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Thank you for explaining that and clearing that up. I was wondering, yeah, if they'd be able to sort of make him whole. Like, I don't know if he's been holding out on going elsewhere, but one of the things that pinged on my radar were two of his potential suitors in San Antonio and Detroit being like, we're going to give that to Collins or we're going to give that to Harris. Now, I think Detroit still has their MLE, but I think the role is sort of taken in a lot of ways. Like, I don't think you sign Rui and John Collins or you sign Rui and Tobias Harris. I think they sort of step on each other's toes in both cases. So those teams signing different players, either they don't think as highly of Rui, and Collins got like 18 a year, 351, or actually that's 17, my math's bad, from the Detroit Pistons, so that's a little bit more than the MLE. They either weren't in the mix for him, didn't think as highly of him, or there was some word, and that's usually what happens, is you get some intel on what's going to happen with a guy. So that speculation that McMenamin was talking about, that's where I'm at too, of like, there's a reason Rui isn't signed yet, and maybe it's because nobody values him to that degree. But I'm a little skeptical of that.
I think there were seemingly teams that were going to be in on Rui at the MLE. All the reporting at the very beginning of free agency was about strong interest from the Spurs to bring him in, Pete. But it's my understanding the Spurs were also wanting to limit deals to two-year deals and not give longer deals, right? And that makes sense for them because they're going to get very expensive soon. Wemby's going to be up for his contract extension. And then soon after that, it will be Castle and then it'll be Harper. And the last thing you want is a guy on your books maybe in four seasons for $18 million where you're just like, wait, man, where's this money going to come from? Are we in the second apron now? Especially when Fox is still on their books as well right now, right? So it's not a short-term problem. It's a longer-term problem. Again, I don't think the Lakers can give Rui, or I don't even think Rui would maybe want to sign a four-year deal starting at like $13.5 million. Like if the Lakers were to execute all of that cap space, which includes like trading Bronny into cap space as well. But if they wanted to give Rui a one-year deal, $11.7 million, like I get that that's not what you wanted. Bronny's still on the team in that case, and then you go. Or one-year, $13.5 million deal, or whatever it starts with, they could definitely do that. And is that a little bit less than the MLE? Sure, but he doesn't have to move. He gets to play for the Lakers still. He's probably slotted right into their starting lineup as the starting power forward. And this is a thing that I would say. I know Grimes is not smart and that they're totally different sorts of players, but the
formula... Oh, you meant Marcus Smart.
Yes. Yes, I meant Marcus Smart. Sorry. Oh, man.
The look I just gave you.
I'm just like, wait, what did I say?
Sorry, I know. Continue. I'm like, where are we going?
I know Quentin Grimes is not Marcus Smart, Pete. They're very totally different sorts of players, but the lineup construction of Luka, Austin, a rim rolling center, and Rui as a weak side, or even like in the slot above the break, 3-point shooter, that's a known formula that works. And if you turn that other offensive player into Quentin Grimes instead of Marcus Smart, then there's truly nowhere to hide. And Rui can be in strong side corner. Grimes could be in strong side corner. You can start to play five out offense with Kessler above the break a little bit and DHO stuff. You open up a bunch of stuff within your offense this way that I'm super intrigued by. And I don't want to start talking as if like this is going to happen. There's still a bunch of things that would need to go through. But I'm very hopeful that this is a scenario that's on the table.
It would be great. And in the scenario that we're laying out, obviously that would require moving three roster spots essentially for one in Rui, opening up two more roster spots. So these are smaller roles. I don't think either guy would necessarily be in the rotation. But what would you be looking for out of sort of those last two slots?
I'd for sure be looking for another veteran to compete on the wing, particularly one who's geared more towards defense. There's been a lot of names that have been out there. Tybal's a name that has been out there. It's just like, oh, could you get him for the minimum? A guy I really like is actually a former Laker, came through South Bay, and now his lived up in my neck of the woods for a while now, and that's Gary Payton II. He's like a guy who can defend up or down. He's got a ton of playoff experience. He's a great locker room guy. It wouldn't surprise me if he's back in Golden State, but I would love to have him as like a, no, man, go out there and just pester dudes defensively. And he's the exact sort of guy that you actually want playing next to Luka and Austin, because he's guard-sized and defends guards, but doesn't need the ball at all, ever. Good off-ball worker. So that's a guy that I like too. And another thing I would like, Pete, is just a older veteran guy who's honestly never going to play, but is good in the locker room. That sort of Jeff Green type, like Kevin Love is probably at that stage of his career now, but a dude who's just going to be sage in the locker room, good dude, who's going to help out and answer questions for the young guys. Like, Austin Reeves can't be your oldest player. That's just not a thing that I want to see necessarily.
And that's one of the biggest questions I have about this upcoming team is you lost your overall leader, your captain in LeBron, and you also lost your defensive captain in Marcus. Those are the two players who talked the most and communicated the most on the defensive end. And there can be teams that have a good amount of talent but have a level of soullessness to them where they are not as cohesive because they don't talk and communicate, because there aren't people in the locker room that really step up to be part of that. And I think you have to be able to play to have the full effect of that. But even those end of the bench guys that have that as well, that can have conversations with guys throughout the season on how it's supposed to go, I think are super valuable. So I'm right there with you on that idea of veteran leadership.
Is there another type of player, like a wing, guard, something else that you would want, just in terms of like even a guy who would compete for minutes at all?
I'm a big believer at this part of the roster of you try to get a tool for every job. And since we're so thin in the way of perimeter defense, the guys that you mentioned, the Tybalt, GP2, those type of players. Javonte Green's another guy. I don't know if he'll be a vet min, but I played with Detroit last year that I really like. That just those guys that can turn up on the defensive end. That's really what it is. So that and just some veteran leadership are exactly what I'm looking for. But all right, got plenty more to talk about. I haven't mentioned this on the pod, but I've joined Lakers Collective as well. We're about to record there, doing a show twice a week with Trevor Lane and Jovan Buha. Having a blast with that, about to do that now. So come check that out. But until tomorrow, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.